Today on Rockin' the Suburbs, we used to hate those bands. Sorry. Today on Rockin' the Suburbs, we used to hate these bands. Now we like them. Or as we like
them. No, I got the second part.
Gotcha. Today on Rockin' the Suburbs, we used to hate these bands. Now we like them.
Or, wait, hang on. Yeah, okay, let me try that again. I just didn't like the word there twice.
Gotcha.
All right, go ahead.
Today on Rockin' the Suburbs, we used to hate these bands. Now we like them.
Or, as we like to call it, personal growth. That work?
Yep.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you going to do the open?
I can try. Sure.
All right, let's hear the open.
Crack! Open a Guinness. How was that?
That was a good one. All right. Yeah. So, here we are, back in the basement. Mm-hmm. Bud Verge spent the night, and now he's here.
He did.
And
the couch is comfy.
Yeah,
that's right. I slept on the pool table, unfortunately. Wasn't that comfy?
No, that's not so good.
Yeah, you didn't have to play while I was on there.
Well, that only happened because you passed out there. We couldn't move you.
That's right.
Too much Guinness.
That's right. Too full.
So here we are back in the basement, and we are now going to talk about...
You all right? I think you sprung a leak.
I'm leaking.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to talk about The Doors. It started with a conversation about The Doors, whose debut album came out 50 years ago.
Wow, has it been that long? 67 was an interesting year.
You were like 16 then when it came out, right?
I was 14.
Oh,
that's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that led us into a conversation about bands that we didn't like at one point in our lives and now we like now because, Bud, that happened to you with The Doors, right?
It did. I could not stand The Doors growing up. It just, like I said, we had two radio stations in town. One was the pop station, one was the album rock station. And the two camps were divided, and God, they jammed the Doors down my throat every day, and I couldn't stand them. I found Jim Morrison insufferable, and it was just, come on, baby, light my fire.
That kind of lounge singing thing you did.
God, yeah. I hate this. Get me away from it. So, you know, I conveniently ignored it for about 30 or 35 years until one day I was, cruising around Netflix. This is before Netflix and chill, but I was chilling watching some Netflix. And I came upon this great series called Classic Albums.
Mm-hmm.
And
This is on Netflix? There's a series called Classic Albums?
There's a series called Classic Albums.
I don't even know about this.
There were DVDs that they actually sold in stores.
Yeah.
Once when you can go to stores that sold DVDs.
Yeah. I only have VHS.
And it was, you know, a track by track of, you know, The Doors' debut 1967 record.
Very cool.
And it was, you know, Densmore was on it. Robbie Krieger was on it. Manzarek was on it. Henry Rollins was on it. And the producer, I forget who the producer of the 1967 Doors record was, but they explained how they came up with the album, how the songs were written. And they actually, you know, sat down at the soundboard and they would bring up just the drums or just the keyboards.
Cool.
Or just, you know, Morrison's vocals. And at that point, I'm like, you know what? The Doors, they weren't that bad. Mm-hmm. They weren't crap, you know? You know, I could take the Jim Morrison part out of it. You know, I'm still not in love with Jim Morrison, although, you know, the chicks think he's hot.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you just listen to the music, I mean, these guys could really play music. And that was the beautiful part of it. And I think, you think in 1967, we just changed decade or changed years. And we went from, you know, the great 1966, which everybody calls like, you know, one of the greatest music years ever. You know, when you had stuff like the Beatles Revolver and you had Beach Boys Pet Sounds.
Right.
And all sorts of great like albums that are like, you know, pieces of art with like orchestras and.
Blonde on Blonde, the first real rock double album.
You know, all these great records of 66. Then you turn over to 67, you've got a whole different sound coming out of LA. You know, in Venice Beach and the clubs
love,
and the whiskey.
Like love was
and let's,
out there,
you know, and those first couple of notes of the first record, the first song, the first side, boom. If you don't get got right there, you're not going to get got.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. Can you still recall the time we cried? Bring on through to the other side.
That producer, by the way, was Paul Rothschild. Mm. Did you know Paul Rothschild?
I didn't. I was going to guess Bruce Botnick.
He also produced Janis Joplin. Mm. So there you
well
go.
Well done.
Which it's similar, you know, in that vein, what you're talking about, that kind of shift. Mm-hmm. You know, the Janis Joplin kind of came mm-hmm. on later when mm-hmm. that kind of shift in music happened. And I don't know. I never really took to the Doors. My view of the Doors was that was the kind of band that people in college, guys I didn't necessarily hang out with, would have like Jim Morrison posters hanging up on their dorm room walls. And you kind of knew, I don't think I need to say too much. You know the kind of person I'm talking about. Right?
We weren't going to that side of town.
That's the Doors to me. So
yeah,
I don't know. And plus I think I was also, I'm also tainted a little bit by that horrible movie that
yeah.
came out.
Val Kilmer was involved, yeah. I think.
Terrible.
Mm-hmm. Meg Ryan, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you on the Doors?
Yeah, I've always kind of liked the Doors, apparently, contrary to popular opinion. I always thought they were pretty okay. The first album, I agree with Bud. It's a very good record. And think of the time, you know, as you were saying, Bud, like when it came out. But Morrison was a pretty, you know, unique character at that time. There weren't a lot of these sort of, you know, bare-chested, long-haired guys, you know, who were just totally committed to poetry, but also were fronting a rock band at the time, right? And a pretty good one.
With leather pants,
and also singing a song called The End, you know, which was kind of a psychic exploration that famously apparently got him kicked out of the Whiskey or whatever in Hollywood when they played it. The owner said, if you play that one more time, it's freaking everybody in here out. Don't ever play it again. And the first thing they did, of course, was launch into that song. So, yeah. And you know, I think he, as he became, you know, sadly sort of slid down the ladder of alcoholism or just sort of dependence, right? And became like a little fatter and a little slower and a little less interesting, and people sort of caught up with him and passed him. You know, that was kind of a sad thing. And obviously he came to a sad end at a very young age. But along the way, there are some gems, you know, scattered here and there. Like the Morrison Hotel album is a pretty good album. It's kind of an underrated record in the canon. And I don't know, I always kind of liked him in kind of a learning about rock and roll kind of way.
It also, that time period was sort of the peak of the idea of like rock music as art and poetry.
That's right.
Right? You know, mm-hmm. that idea that it was no longer just like kids dance music, but that it really would try to have something to say or to be important art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think others, you know, like Simon Garfunkel and people like that, I think maybe have done it better than that, but that really was, it was right for that time, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's take a short break here,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll come back, and Patrick, you and I will talk about bands that we didn't like,
yes,
and we have come to appreciate.
Yep.
Right? All right. Hey, Patrick, how do you get your podcasts?
I usually get them on my telephone.
Telephone, like somebody calls you?
That's right. I call the podcast hotline and subscribe to them that way.
Okay, so most people don't have a landline or a flip phone like you. Oh, they have a smartphone, and so they go to iTunes or Audio Boom,
mm-hmm.
and they can subscribe to the show.
Smart.
And that way, they just automatically get the show on their phone.
Smartphone.
Right?
Yep.
And if you please would do that for Rock in the Suburbs, that would help us out immensely. Yes. And then the other thing you can do, dear listeners, that would really help us out would be to rate and review the show. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you like it because you're listening to it. So you would give us a high rating. There's like up to 5 stars, but you should give us 6.
Yep.
And then review it where you actually like, you know, craft in your own words what you think of the show.
I write reviews really well when I'm having a grilled cheese sandwich. Right. So I'd recommend making a grilled cheese, reviewing the show. That's an evening.
All right. That sounds good. So do that. Take Patrick's advice. Do that.
Perfect.
Okay, we're back in the basement on Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I am Patrick Foster.
And we are now going to talk a little bit about, kind of like what Bud talked about with the Doors, a band that maybe we didn't like before, we like now.
Yeah.
I think you were going to go.
I'm going to go, and I'm going to talk about the Grateful Dead. When I was growing up, in my formative years of going to the 930 Club a lot and really being influenced by DIY and punk rock, the Grateful Dead were really like the antithesis of everything that, you know, I stood for, right? They played long, meandering songs. They were like these old hippie guys, right? They were not fast. They were not particularly politically concerned about anything. They didn't have an agenda. They didn't want to make anyone mad, you know? And I liked groups that did all that stuff.
A good vibe.
That's right, yeah. But interestingly enough, I had a good friend named Bill Kellum who was into a lot of the same music I was. He liked a lot of that out kind of punk stuff and weird independently made records and homemade records. And come to find out, as I got to know him better, he had a massive collection of Grateful Dead live tapes. Mm-hmm. And I said, like, I hate the Dead. Like, I don't understand it. You know, what a waste of time. Like, why are you spending any time collecting this stuff or listening to it? And he began to slowly turn me on to what I think a lot of people consider the real Grateful Dead, which is what they did in concert, right? And he gave me some tapes, I think from around 1971 or 1972, when they, one from Portland, Oregon, I remember especially being an amazing one. Really changed my mind about the band. I mean, they sounded fresh, they sounded vibrant, they sounded creative. You could really hear how they were playing off each other. You know, even took the time to say, Bob's in the left channel and Jerry's in the right channel. Like, you got to listen to how they cue each other and how they play. And we, you know, in times gone by, we've talked about on podcasts the Grateful Dead and had people that were, you know, real right. devotees talking about them. But yeah, that's kind of what did it. And the more I listened to them, the more I kind of got won over by what they do. And then as I began to learn about their history and their importance in rock and roll, how they were like one of the first bands to openly encourage people taping them and trading those tapes as a way of getting their reputation out there, right? It's a very kind of, you know, now concept, right? Just give your music kind of away for free, whether it's streaming or online or whatever, and then get people into the band other ways, right? With merchandise or going to see shows or things like that, which is what the Dead did. And they also overcame the stigma of technology in the sense that they built their own sound system and they took it with them. No other band had ever done that before. They built a state-of-the-art sound system that could accommodate right. and make them sound great for big crowds.
So did learning these things change your mind about them?
Is it that helped. What you're saying? Yeah. You know, okay. just as I more understood what an important band they were in rock and roll history in that sense, right?
Well, and I think you hit upon one thing that I think makes it maybe somewhat difficult for people who don't really know the band to get into them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would consider myself one of those people as yeah. well, is that, you know, if you listen to their studio recordings, it just doesn't feel like there's much there. You no. have to get into those tapes, right? You have That's to get right. into the live thing yeah. or go to
the show,
them
right. right
when they were playing.
Right.
That is really how you become a fan of a band like that, not yeah. from just listening to the stuff that they recorded proper.
No, that's exactly right. And that was also kind of an interesting thing too. They sort of turned the whole concept of like, you got to go into the studio and make this album. It's like the most important thing. And you got to have a hit single to be successful. Like that's the way the music business worked in the 60s and 70s. Right. But they threw all that out the window. They didn't pay any attention to it, which right. is pretty revolutionary. And some, they didn't care. They just went to fulfill the contract that they had to fulfill. And they sort of made studio records.
Did you want to say something over there? I'm getting a hands up. No. You have to be on mic. So my wife, Katie, she wants to say something.
Somebody in the crowd.
Hang on. You can't just, you know, talk from across the room.
Yeah. I think I'm about to be
I don't have a
viciously
boom mic.
Shouted down.
Yeah. All right. So hang on. She's coming in here. Here we go.
No, I just wanted to say, as a Dead follower,
mm-hmm.
I know exactly what you're saying is it was not about the albums. It's all about the show.
Right.
And that's why they're, everybody who listened to the Dead, it was, you follow the Dead. I followed them from New York all the way down to Florida.
Wow.
And then back up again for, I think it was a year. And wow. It was a whole, it's a culture. It's
yeah.
not just about listening to the music. It's about what the music is about. And they were about a whole different culture.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that sense of community, right?
Yes.
That you got from people that you saw at the same shows
absolutely,
every night.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to come in here and say that was huge.
Yeah.
That's what they were all about.
And they've essentially invented that kind of thing in rock and roll,
thanks,
right? They invented like following a band, right? You never
without
went to multiple shows.
Without Twitter.
Right. Without Twitter.
Yes.
Exactly.
No, you're right. I think it's one of those bands that, like, if you don't become part of that scene or that culture in some way, it's really hard to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
Bud, what do you think about the Grateful Dead?
Not a fan.
Okay. See what I mean? Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
I went to one show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah. People were under the influence of
yeah.
things, and there were girls spinning, and
there was a lot of spinning.
There were some brownies, and
yeah.
you know, I think it was a stadium show, so I tried to find the furthest, highest
yeah.
part away from the show to just get through it.
Right.
Not
right.
my bag.
Right.
I think they had some good songs, but honestly, I like a lot of the songs, Dead songs, that are covered by other people. I think
yeah.
that shows some of their songwriting and how good it is,
yeah.
but it's
yep.
like
yep.
maybe less noodling and
right.
things like that.
And
right?
last year, there was a you know, a pretty big album put out by a lot of sort of progressive musicians, right?
Oh, is that
I think
right?
The guys from The National organized it. It was a whole double Grateful Dead album that came out. But I'm so glad you told the story, because I saw the Dead one time also, and it was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. They were horrible. It was when they toured with Bob Dylan, because I went to see Dylan.
Same show.
Right.
Foxborough.
Right. Dylan and the Dead. It was a mess. They were out of tune the whole time.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
And for some reason, they decided to play together, which was a terrible
it's
idea.
Horrible.
Bob's guitar was so far out of tune at RFK Stadium that he had no idea what was going on. Yet later, I just became a fan of the music,
yeah.
like listening to the tapes.
Go check out, there's a really good tribute album in the 90s called Dedicated, which
uh-huh.
was other
Best.
Artists playing Grateful Dead songs. And there is an incredible version of Friend of the Devil by Lyle Lovett.
Oh, interesting.
That will just kill you, man. It's really, really good.
I set out running, but I take my time. Friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight.
And you know, to pick a little bit up on Bud's point, there's a book that came out last year called Heads. It's called something like The History of Psychedelia in America. But it's really interesting to read that book and understand what a big influence the Grateful Dead had on the psychedelic experience in America, and how many people, like Steve Wozniak, for example, and others that were influential in founding some tech companies in California were big Deadheads. And they, you know, that whole
yep.
kind of sense of community and DIY influenced those people a lot. So in many ways, I've come to appreciate them, but in the meantime, ended up liking their music.
Okay. So is it my turn now?
It is.
All right. So here's my band that I didn't like, but now really like. Like, I mean, like a lot. And my pick is Fleetwood Mac.
Hmm.
I know you're a big fan, right, Patrick?
I love
you
them.
Sort
yeah.
of always have been, right?
I've always loved Fleetwood Mac.
And
yeah.
you, Bud?
I agree. Great band.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amazing band. How did you not like them? That's my
You know
first
what
question.
I think it is? Here's what I think it is. When they were really popular in the late 70s with Rumors and the album before that was just called Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the, what I now know is sort of like the reboot of Fleetwood Mac,
yeah.
where they went from being this like sort of blues band into a more
right.
of like a pop rock band.
Right.
Anyway, they were really big in the late 70s and then into the early 80s, even with like the MTV era.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that Mirage, I think was the album or something like that. And it had hit songs and
yep.
Tusk was on there and all
yep.
It was right before that. Anyway, they always seemed maybe just a little bit too kind of light rock for me. And then the other thing I think that maybe I just couldn't connect to at that time, because I was, you know, a kid, was they seemed like an older band. They seemed like a band, from my perspective, of like adults.
Really?
You know, like they were not my, even close to being sort of like my contemporaries or my peers. They already felt like it was like adult rock. And I just, you know, couldn't connect to it. And then you come to learn that, like, you know, they're having affairs with each other and all this kind of stuff. Adult. And it just felt like, as from a kid's perspective, like, what is going on there with that band? Like, what's happening? To me, it didn't seem cool in that way.
Right.
You know, it was like, it felt like it was like, you know, your aunts and uncles, like, you know, running around and trying to make the scene or something like that.
I gotcha.
And
I just,
you know, weren't they under some, the influence of some other influences that the Grateful Dead fans perhaps were the opposite influence?
They may have been.
There's maybe a little Bolivian marching powder.
Yeah,
involved.
That's right. I think that's right.
So I just, you know, it just wasn't anything I could really connect with. And so, and really for a long, long time, I had no use for Fleetwood Mac. Now there were a couple times when I'd be like, yeah, you know, Don't Stop, that's a pretty good song. Or, you know, Go Your Own Way. That's a pretty good song, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was only really in the last few years that I, like, I don't know even what prompted me into this. Maybe just because I'm an old guy now. And so I sat and listened to Rumors, Fleetwood Mac, Tusk. I have a vinyl copy of that now, which my friend Mitchell Thorson gave me.
Oh, yes. Fantastic.
And there are so many good songs. And what I really have come to appreciate about Fleetwood Mac now is sort of how different a lot of the songs are.
Yeah.
You know, that there's just these different textures to them, and because of the various songwriters they had and things like that.
So you can now tell a Christine McVie song from a Lindsey Buckingham song, for example.
Exactly.
Yes.
I think it's like the Beatles, whoever sings it wrote it.
There you go. Yep.
So now I'm like really into them. Like, I really love, I know one of your favorite songs is Sarah.
Yep.
Right?
Love that song.
You know, I love Rihanna. I love Secondhand News, I think is a great
tune,
pop
man.
Song.
Yep.
You know, just so many, like I actually did not realize, Dreams, I didn't realize, you know, I know that was a huge hit, but it's like, I didn't realize like really how many really, really good songs they have and how, you know, kind of different a lot of them are. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
So now,
fantastic.
Yeah, Fleetwood Mac all the way.
Tusk is a pretty good record.
That is a good record. Yeah. What's really interesting about that is how ambitious it was to come off of
Sprawling.
Rumors and say, like, we're not going to basically make Rumors 2.
Right. Which would have been easy.
Completely experimental and different and just, you know, out of left field.
Yep.
And I don't think it sold very well at the time.
No.
But I give them a lot of credit for being so bold like that.
Was that one of those albums kind of shipped platinum but returned gold?
I think that's right. Yeah. Everybody bought it. It was like a double or a triple. I think maybe a double, but a lot of content.
All right. So this was fun.
A lot of fun.
All right. And please listen to Rock in the Suburbs every day on iTunes or Audio Boom. Email us about bands that maybe you've changed your opinion on at suburbspod@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at suburbspod, Facebook, same deal, or call the Suburban Party line that is 612-440-1984. And we're going to play out with a song that is on my jukebox here in the basement.
Fantastic.
You Make Love and Fun with Wood Mac.
So we'll have a guy come by and squirt water in your mouth whenever you need it. Just let us know, yeah.